Thanks, Adam. Good evening to everybody. Most of you who are here may already know Justin. In case you don't, let me take a moment to introduce him to everyone and to thank him for being willing to speak for us during a vacation trip. We're certainly glad to have the privilege to hear him. Justin is one of the ministers for the Hillcrest Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas. He and his brother Terrell are writers of Vacation Bible School and devotional material. They are the authors of the VBS that our group will be doing in West Virginia here in a couple of weeks, Righteous Roundup. Justin also, in working with university students, teaches a course or two at Abilene Christian University every semester. What, one or two, Justin? Just one or so every semester. We've had him as our guest speaker before, and he does a great job, and I know you will appreciate what he's prepared for tonight. Justin.
I'm going to stand down here. I like being closer to you guys. Plus, this moves on wheels, so I can come over here. Oh, that's okay. thanks for having me. It's great to be here. I'm a little tired. I've spent the last half of the afternoon consoling Bill after the Cardinals lost, so it was kind of a tough job. I was the only one there, so somebody had to do it. I don't know if you're like me. Does anybody tend to zone out on occasion? Just sitting? Yeah, thanks. Just sitting there, mostly during class, right, guys? Mostly you're just sitting there, and you just kind of, everything else just sort of fades in the background. You find yourself just staring off into the middle distance and not really registering. I was doing that earlier, and Harper was like, Earth to Dad, are you there? What do you think? What are you doing? It's like, I'm thinking. She's like, thinking? Thinking about what? Thinking about what I'm going to say. But I do that very often, and used to it was worse, and Carrie knew if she wanted me to pay attention or wanted to know that I was actually absorbing the things that she was saying, she had to make a specific effort to say, Justin, look, I need you to look at me. All right, I need you to watch my mouth. Can you see the words coming out of my mouth? Are you listening? Are you paying attention? And at first I thought it was insulting until I realized I do this quite a bit. I don't really pay attention. Years ago, there was, and it seems to be, it happens mostly during football season. I don't know why that is, but there used to be a commercial that was on TV during football season of a referee, and he made a call, and everybody was really upset, and he went over to the sideline, and there was a coach that was just yelling directly into his ear, and he was just standing there very stoically, not paying attention at all. And the commentators, you hear them talking about this and saying, I wonder what kind of special training goes into being able to withstand that sort of abuse. And then it cuts to a scene of him on his couch watching TV with his wife sitting right next to him just yelling in his ear. And she's yelling, are you even listening to me right now? And I think about that a lot. Are you listening? It's a question that comes out of my mouth all the time. If those of us who have kids know what it's like to ask that constantly. Are you listening? Are you paying attention? Do you hear the things that I'm saying to you right now? It's a question I want us to think about tonight. Are you listening? I don't know if you have ever asked that question of God, but sometimes I know that I have. I wonder, God, are you paying attention? Do you hear me? Are you listening? How often do you ask that question, wondering whether or not God is paying attention to the things that you're asking him? The Psalms of disorientation and laments address that question. They are psalms that ask God, are you listening? Are you paying attention? And I think they're really important for us because they teach us several things. One, that it is okay to ask God, are you listening? Is it okay to wonder and have doubts about God? It teaches us how to do that, and it gives us ways to express ourselves when we do wonder, God, are you paying attention? Are you listening? But also, it's important because it teaches us that we need to ask the same question of ourselves. I don't know about you, but I very often see myself as being the center of a particular story, right? When I was little, I used to imagine the world worked in a certain way where nobody would be moving until I happened to come into a room or into a location, and then everybody would kind of take action, as though the world and its activity revolved around my presence. I don't know if any of you have ever been like that. But that's a backwards way of looking at it. And sometimes we look at things from our perspective. God, are you paying attention? Are you listening to me? Do you hear what I have going on? Do you see me? But often I wonder if God is asking the same thing of us. Are you listening? Are you paying attention? Tonight I want us to look at two psalms, Psalm 50 and Psalm 81. If you have your Bibles, we're going to pay attention to those two. Just keep your fingers. We're going to be flipping back and forth. These are both lament psalms, psalms of disorientation, but they're interesting. They're not from the perspective of God's people crying out to God. Instead, it is from the perspective of God asking his people and complaining and lamenting about the relationship that he has with his people. Only two psalms that we have that are God's psalms of lament about his people. Usually we have God speaking through the prophets in harsh and difficult ways. But these psalms show us an emotional God who is in anguish over his people's refusal to hold up their end of the covenant. We're going to start in Psalm 50. In both of these psalms, the first several verses serve as a summons and a reminder. Summons meaning someone is calling out to the people. God is about to speak. You need to hear him. And also a reminder. This is who God is. This is what your relationship has looked like in the past. I want you to read with me the first four verses of Psalm 50. This is the summons. The Mighty One, God the Lord, speaks and summons the earth from the rising of the sun to its setting. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God shines forth. Our God comes. He does not keep silent. Before him is a devouring fire, around him a mighty tempest. He calls to the heavens above and to the earth that he may judge. Whew. Boy, talk about setting the stage, right? In the summons, the psalmist reminds God's people that God is coming and he is very mythic and awe-inspiring. They remind him that he is a truly mighty God who has the ability to judge his people. I've decided that Carrie and I need to hire a herald to just live at our house, and whenever Liam and Harper get in trouble, I want them to just stand in the middle of our house with a loud voice and saying, "Children, your daddy summons you to the living room, and from his throne he will belch forth fire and judgment upon you." Right? I mean, they would come in with a proper attitude about whatever it is they've done wrong, right? Wouldn't that be great? How many of you would love to have that? It sets a certain tone for what God is about to do and what he's about to say. The psalmist is reminding that this is a powerful God. He has created us. He is perfection personified. And he has the ability to judge us. Talk about setting the mood. And then right after that, this is the reminders. Gather to me my faithful ones who made a covenant with me by sacrifice. The heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. I want you to notice a few of the key words here. Faithful ones, covenant, sacrifice, righteousness. This is covenant language. We are being reminded, the people are being reminded of their relationship with God through the use of covenant language. Israel is reminded that they are God's people and that they have made a pact with God. He's setting the stage that God is about to judge them, and he's doing so based on known expectations, based on this relationship that already exists. This is who you have said you would be, and this is who I have said I would be, and we agreed upon these things together. Now, flip over to Psalm 81, and let's take a look at the summons and the reminder there. The first three verses of Psalm 81 serve as its summons. I want you to notice the difference in the tone. Sing aloud to God our strength. Shout for joy to the God of Jacob. Raise a song. Sound the tambourine, the sweet lyre, and the harp. Blow the trumpet at the new moon, the full moon, on our feast day. So again, there is a summons, but it's different. Instead of this mythic and awe-inspiring and fear-filled summons, instead it is one that is joyful. It's God speaking, being heralded by festive music, joyful celebration, showing that while God is a God to be feared, he is also a God to be joyful in. reminded of Bill's sermon this morning about the reasons and the ways that we find joy and we rejoice in our faith and in God. Now listen to verses 4 through 7, the reminders. For it is a statute of Israel, a rule of God, of the God of Jacob. He made it a decree in Joseph when he went out over the land of Egypt. I hear a language I had not known. I relieved your shoulder of the burden. Your hands were freed from the basket. In distress you called, and I delivered you. I answered you in the secret place of thunder. I attended to you at the waters of Meribah. Again, God is reminding his people of who they are and what he has done for them. I want you to think about the things that he has mentioned here in this verse. What is the statute, the decree that he mentions? God is reminding them that they are a distinct people, that when Joseph died, God's people remained in Egypt, multiplying, becoming fruitful. A new king has risen up and put them into slavery. And the decree that God makes is when he goes out over and against Egypt to set them free, to saying, these are my people. I am their protector. I am their God. I will take care of them, and never again will they be enslaved to anything. In the context of the Exodus, it's easy to see the actions that God refers to in the rest of the reminders. Moses being born, delivered in a basket, people crying out to God, and God raising Moses to deliver them. God speaking to Moses in the mountain at the burning bush, and Moses and the people being tested at Meribah when he strikes the rock instead of speaking to it. It's incredible that in just a few words, God reminds them of this rich history that he has with them, one that they should definitely be joyful and celebratory in, right? Sing to make music to God, right? And here's why, because God has done all of these things for you. You were in slavery and you were in Egypt, but God set you free. He heard your cry and he lifted you up. So what is important about understanding these reminders and understanding the summons? Because they set the stage for the complaint that's about to get made. Whenever you have a complaint to make, it's often better if you do so from a position of strength, right? From a position of authority, from a place where you can rationalize and you can reason out of it. Whenever our kids get into trouble, it's not enough for us to just punish them or yell at them or whatever, or if someone who doesn't know them tries to do that. There has to be an understanding of who we are, of what our relationship looks like. There has to be some sort of knowledge that, yeah, you remember when we talked about this. This is something that you knew about, right? Well, that's what is happening here. We want to understand the stage. God is saying, this is who I am. This is who you have said you would be. This is our history. This is what I have done for you. And despite all of that, you caused me grief. Despite all of that history and all of that knowledge, even though you know all of these things, you're missing the point. Again, it's not enough that we just discipline, but we have to come to an understanding. We have to know why that's being done. And it always comes down, I think, to the same thing, behavior that is inconsistent with a known expectation. Anytime our kids are in trouble, anytime I ever got in trouble when I was a kid, it was because I was doing something that was against what I knew to be right. I knew what was expected of me, but I behaved in a different way. The same thing with us, the same thing with God's people. And we wonder, why does any good relationship fall apart? It usually comes down to some kind of broken trust or broken relationship. You let someone down or someone lets you down. Trust is destroyed. You do things that behave in a way that breaks some kind of a code. I remember once when I was in high school, I had a friend of mine who we were really close. We were tight. He was older, even though we were a freshman, he had already had his license, and he would pick me up and drop me off after school, and he took me around all these different places. And I remember one day we're sitting in class, and he comes in and he sits down in front of me, and he had an earring in. Now, this is, you know, years ago, okay? So this isn't a normal thing back then. And this is in a very, very small town, right? Our graduating class was about 32. So this is a very highly unusual occurrence that this guy would come and sit down with an earring in his ear. And so, being the nice guy that I am, I thought I would point out to him the irregularity of his behavior. Now, that makes it sound really sweet. I actually called him a girl and a sissy and all these kinds of things. I was kind of being a jerk about it. I wasn't as nice back then as I am now. I'm trying to raise kids and get into heaven, right? So back then, though, I was giving him a really hard time, and I just kept whispering things in his ear throughout all of class, because I thought it was really funny. And about halfway through class, he just gets up and he yells some not so nice things about me, and he gets kicked out and sent home for the day. And man, I felt so bad. I felt so terrible. And we were never friends again after that. I tried to apologize, but he just wouldn't hear it. I was supposed to be there for him, right? As his friend, I was supposed to not give him such a hard time. I was supposed to be understanding. I was supposed to be all of these things, and I wasn't. Anytime I ever got in trouble as a kid, it was always because I was doing something that my parents had already told me I wasn't supposed to do. It's the same with God. So what are God's complaints? What are the things that he says in Psalm 50 and Psalm 81 that we ought to take note of? I think when God speaks and he says, here's some things I have against you, it ought to make us set up and take notice. We ought to want to write some things down so that we know and we can avoid these as well. In Psalm 50, verses starting in verse 8 down through 15, this is God's first complaint against his people. It is not for your sacrifices that I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. But I will not accept a bull from your house, or goats from your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. I know all of the birds in the hills. I know all that moves in the field. It is all mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you. For the world and its fullness are mine. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer to God a thanksgiving sacrifice, and perform your vows to the Most High, and call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you will glorify me. So what is God's complaint? It seems apparent that they are worshiping God, right? Your sacrifices are continually before me. It is not for those things that I rebuke you. So what is God's complaint? They are worshiping him. They're offering sacrifices. He says, it's not for those things that I rebuke you. And then he goes into this speech about not accepting any of it from you. I'm not going to accept a bull. I'm not going to accept this. All these things are mine. So what are we to understand about what it is that God is upset about? What is he lamenting? True, they were worshiping God, but I think they were doing it for the wrong reasons. I think they had somehow come to believe that God depended upon them to do these things, that God depended upon them to offer these bulls and offer these sacrifices, that somehow God needed them to worship him instead of the other way around. But what God is saying here is, I don't need any of those things, just like he doesn't need ours. He doesn't need us to praise him. He doesn't need us to come together. He doesn't need us to take the Lord's Supper. He doesn't need us to sing to him. We do. He doesn't need any of it, but we do. We need those things. We need to be able to find expression to praise and worship God. We need one another. We need to be able to come together and be reminded of who God is. We need a way to show our reliance upon God and all things. And above all, we need a way to express our love and our devotion. And it is when we flip that that God is upset. Your sacrifices are always before me, but I don't have your heart, the very thing that I desire the most. Because when I speak about needing to do these things, it's not in terms of responsibility or duty. God's main complaint is that while he has their automatic obedience, he doesn't have their heart. Are we here because we need to be here? Are we here because we need to be in the company of other Christians? Because we need to do this? Or are we here because we just go through the motions? Because it's what we've always done? Because it's just tradition for us? Or do we need to find expression? Do we need God the way we need air? The second thing, he says, is I want your life. Continuing on in verses 16 and Psalm 50, to the wicked God says, what right have you to recite my statutes or take my covenant upon your lips? For you hate discipline, and you cast my words behind you. If you see a thief, you're pleased with him, and you keep company with adulterers. You give your mouth free rein for evil, and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. In Psalm 81, verses 9, he says, there shall be no strange god among you. You shall not bow down to a foreign god. I think we're starting to get a picture of a people who are offering sacrifices to God when necessary and doing whatever else they want the rest of the time. I think this breaks down in a couple of ways. One, it is I want to serve the world and I want the world to serve me. I keep company with thieves. I keep company with people who aren't doing the things that God would do, and it pleases me. I'm doing what I can to get ahead. I offer to God what is His occasionally to appease Him because I think He needs it. And then I live my life the way I want to the rest of the time. So it's this balance of wanting to keep one foot in one world and one in the other. We want the blessings of God in the sacrifices. We want the blessings of God, so we come to worship and we sit in our pews and we take our communion. But then in the rest of our lives, we're just doing whatever we want to do. In another sense, it's this idea of we're giving our leftovers to God. Whatever time and energy we have left after serving our own needs is what we turn over to God on Sundays or at the end of the day or the rest of the time. I don't know about you, but leftovers are awful. Did you guys ever have leftover night when you were growing up? Or maybe you still do? Yeah, you guys are like, uh-uh. Yeah, leftovers are bad. It's that night where you pull everything out of the refrigerator, right? And you end up with spaghetti and cold corn and soggy Mexican salad along with like a piece of pie, right? And none of it goes together. None of it was meant to be together. It just sort of is all pulled out and shoved together and nobody really wants it, but you kind of got to do it. Now the question is, what are we serving God? Are we serving up our leftovers? Whatever energy, whatever passion, whatever commitment we have after the world drains us. After we spend so much time doing the things that we want to do, and then we just sort of, okay, well, here you go, God. Here's whatever I have left. What are you serving God? God says, I want your life. I don't want your leftovers. I want you to serve me first and foremost. Number three, God says, I want you to let me be me and submit to my will. This is probably one of the scarier complaints. Psalm 50, 21, he says, these things you have done and I have been silent. You thought that I was one like yourself. You thought that I was one like yourself. I think this is one of the scarier complaints because at times I think maybe we can all be a little bit guilty of this because we want to work backwards to our view of God. We want to start with self and then determine what God looks like based on what I know. We want to mold God into our image instead of molding ourselves into the image of God. We want to say, I cannot imagine a God that would X. Well, what does it have to do with me? We want to say, I cannot believe a God would do this or the other. I don't think a loving God. God just wants me to be happy. Since when did God ask our opinion about what He should do or what He should be like? There's a reason the Proverbs 9:10 says that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. Now, I don't think that that is, a lot of people want to stop and say, now this isn't real fear, this is like a healthy respect. But when I look at Isaiah, when I look at John in Revelation, and I see them coming into the presence of God and falling down on their face, scared to death, scared that God is going to end them, I think, no, maybe this is real fear. Because when we see God, truly see God, we know that He is so much bigger than we are, and we have no right to question Him. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom because it takes us out of ourselves and it helps us to recognize that there is something out there much greater than I. And then I have to stop putting God in this small little box and saying, this is who God is, and instead to let God be God. God says, you thought that I was one like you. You tried to put me in this box and say, this is how you behave and this is how you act, but instead, I want you to let me be me and instead mold your image after my own. We need to recognize that God is bigger and submit our will to His, understanding that our logic is not His. Our understanding is not His. Finally, the last thing He says is that I want you to listen. In Psalm 81, verse 8, and then again in verses 11 through 13, He says, hear, O my people, while I admonish you. O Israel, if you would but listen to me. But my people did not listen to my voice. Israel would not submit to me. So I gave them over to their stubborn hearts to follow their own counsel Oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. There is a big difference between hearing and listening. I know that as a kid, I often heard my parents. I heard what they were saying, but I didn't always listen to what they were saying. What's the difference between hearing and listening? Imagine you told your kids, I want you to go clean your room. And so they went, and they go into their room, and they're in there for a while, and they come back out, and they say, okay, so I heard what you said, and I went into my room, and I thought a lot about what it would look like for me to clean it. And so here it is. If I were to clean my room, I would have picked toys up and put them away. I didn't actually do any of those things, but I heard what you said, and I figured out what that meant. Is that listening? Or imagine they came back out and they said, okay, I heard what you said. I heard that you said to clean my room. So what I did is I called my friends over, and we all got together, and we all had a big discussion about what it would look like and what it would mean if we cleaned the room. And we thought about how we would break that all down and how we might ought to behave and all these kinds of things. Did you actually clean your room? No, we didn't clean the room. We just we heard that you said that, and we thought a lot about it. It's ridiculous, right? But don't we sometimes do that? We hear the things that God says and we talk a lot about it, but how much do we actually do it? God says, I wish that you would listen to me and walk in my ways. So we're back to where we started. Are we listening to God? When you boil down all of God's complaints against his people, it comes down to this one thing. His people are not actively listening to God. And there are consequences. In Psalm 81, verse 12, it says, I gave them over to their stubborn hearts to follow their own counsel. Paul, in his letter to the Romans, writes in the first chapter about the wrath of God and how it is unveiled against the unrighteousness. And it is not in the way that we might suppose in which God strikes them down or he inflicts them with all of this stuff. No, instead it says in three different occasions, 24, 26, and 38, God gave them up. He gave them over. It's the same phrase. He gave them over to do the things that they wanted to do. He removed his restraining hand. And it doesn't take much more than turning on our TV and the nightly news to see where the world goes when God's restraining hand is not upon the people. It becomes so easy for us to rationalize and make poor choices. Paul illustrates this in Romans in the first couple of chapters by showing how far society can fall when we are left to our own devices, when God's restraining hand is not holding us back. But also there are good consequences. Psalm 50 speaks of deliverance from trouble and being shown the salvation of God. Psalm 81, verse 10, and then 14 through 16 says, open wide your mouth, and I will fill it. I would soon subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their foes. Those who hate the Lord would cringe toward him. Their fate would last forever, but I would feed you with the finest of the wheat, and with honey from the rock, I would satisfy you. Just as any good parent allows their child to experience the consequences of their mistakes, so does God. But also, as a parent's greatest joy and desire is to bless their children and be devoted to them and promise to protect and nurture them, so it is with God for his children who give him their hearts, who serve him with their whole self, who submit to his will and his image and faithfully listen, actively listen to what it is he would have us do. Not making him into our image, but truly trying to understand the image of God and follow that. I don't know if there's anything tonight that you need from this church, whether you need its prayers, whether you need to be invited in and to be a part of the family of God, to receive forgiveness of your sins through baptism. Whatever your need may be tonight, if you have heard any of these things that you may not be lining up with, maybe your whole self isn't devoted to God, maybe you aren't giving him everything that you have, whatever it is that you need, please come while we stand and sing the invitation song.